This idea is a simple one, really. Gather some of the very best, most talented designers, place them around a table, drop the topic, hit the little red button, and see what happens. This really is the idea that I came up with in 2017, and after years of attending industry events and leaving with a sense of, I don't know if you'd call it disappointment, that the formal conversations didn't yield the same amazing dialogue and results that the informal ones did. I wanted to create that informal atmosphere and still record it and bring it to you. So when creatives come off the stage, the audience leaves and they're just chatting amongst themselves. Those chats are pure gold, and I wanted to capture that. We hold these events regularly at Design Hardware. We record them and publish them to Doctoring Up Design, the official podcast of Design Hardware, for you, so that you can listen in and learn what some of the most talented designers in the business, how they operate, how they're adapting to changes in the space. So we gathered on February 29th in partnership with ASID LA. We gathered some amazing creatives to discuss the rapidly changing nature of the design industry and how the rapid changes and evolving tastes are changing the game. You're going to hear an open and honest conversation, the likes of which you rarely hear, which is exactly why we do this. Thank you, ASID Los Angeles. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank each of the individuals who participated in this. You have Cheryl Vines from the Mesa Design Group, Jacqueline Steinberg of Eve Mode Design, Lenora Molly of Molly Design, Mark Cutler and Nicole Schultz of Cutler Schultz. You have Juliet Chetan van der Meiden of Curated by Juliet, and Philip Nielsen of Nielsen Dye. We're talking about important issues that include: how has the business of design changed in a post-pandemic environment? The rise of virtual and remote design, design transitions and changing tastes, the design shows and events. Is the industry keeping up with advanced specifiers and needs? Color, materiality, and performance. How have manufacturers responded to the rapidly changing needs of the trade? Sustainability and wellness. This is a big one. Do clients like to just talk about it, or do they really care? Catalogs and samples, addressing waste in the industry, modern uses for traditional materials. Client relationships are greater now as far as importance. Manufacturers, suppliers, showroom, and vendor relationships. How important are those now? There is a shortage of great partners and partnerships. It's true. Sketch and vision, adding value to design services by showcasing the possibilities. AI as a major new skill set. We started with a very simple question. Because the design industry is such a dynamic and ever-changing space, how is the business of design changing in ways that force you to think differently about how you do the work? How did the pandemic change the business of design? How did it change for designers? How did it create new demand and changing demand? What about services and materiality? That's where we started.
Yeah, that is a very good question. If I think about the world before the pandemic, it was pretty much a world where you saw people a lot. And it was considered normal to have physical interaction. With the pandemic, what happened was that everybody kind of disappeared between their own walls. So that meant that communication virtualized. And for those who love science fiction, this was not really a surprise. But for the rest of the world, it was. So how do you go about engaging your clients and having them become enthusiastic while you're not in physical contact with them, right? So for us, it meant that you had to transition into a situation where you want to get people into this conversation and not have them feel awkward, you know? So that was a very important step that I saw in on many levels, you know, in networks, in the communication with clients, in the way you work, what kind of tools do you have to support that? How are you going to present your plans? I'm not here with my board with all the samples. I'm virtual. So that means that I need other tools to do that. So it was really a big transition, I think, for most people. I thought it was exciting, but maybe not everyone.
Mark?
It was interesting in our office. Nicole and I were just talking about this the other day. The COVID sort of passed us by. We had a lot of clients bought projects, bought houses out of town. They required us to go and visit. They would require us to go and visit face-to-face with them. When Nicole and I became partners, we developed this idea of radical smallness. So we got rid of all of our staff, and our staff is just us. And so we do large-scale projects all over the country, but we do them together. So all throughout COVID, the two of us would still come to the office every day, and we would travel with clients. I mean, fortunately, a lot of them had, you know, access to private travel and things like that, so it made that a bit easier. But we just carried on. We rethought about the way the business looked in terms of its size, so we didn't have to other employees. We had an accountant from out of town, we had a draftsman from out of town, so that was done remotely. Smaller things, which would normally be like a 15-minute job site visit, was done via Zoom. But other than that, we would still show up and do presentations and meet with clients face-to-face. It just felt like they wanted that, and we thought...
We couldn't think of a creative way to show someone, you know, what a silk carpet feels like, how the hand on this fabric is going to translate for them by just holding it up to a Zoom camera. I mean, it just, that Doesn't part and parcel work. Of yeah. what we do day in, day out, which is a lot of touching, feeling, showing, explaining, you know, it's all of that, just the visuals. It just, frankly, doesn't translate that, or didn't for us.
We're essential workers.
Camera.
Coincidentally, ASID just issued their 2024 trend report, not trendy, but trend. And they said there were three elements that came out of the whole pandemic area that they see for 2024. The first one, as Juliet said, was really about communication, people feeling a need more than ever to communicate, which actually gets into generational differences, because Generation X, which is coming up, they were stuck in the middle of this pandemic, and they actually align more with baby boomers and need to communicate, and, you know, the whole hybrid working, that kind of thing, because they're young and, you know, still want mentor. The second one was kind of a blurring of lines between living and working and playing, and people's homes suddenly became workplaces in order to encourage people, you know, not to work from home, became, you know, more like home and play areas. So that kind of blurred everything. And the third thing was about the blurring of wellness and sustainability, that became more important, but people are starting to really see them as one whole issue together. And the whole wellness was really about people appreciating their health and looking at wellness in terms of their homes and even where they work, you know, the air quality, the light. And employers got more sensitive to their needs, biophilic, bringing in greenery, trees, inside out. So those were kind of the three overarching results.
Sure.
Yeah, that's to do your point, just to complete. Of course, that the physical aspect is very important, but I was more referring to the initial contact with the client. You could not have that physically if the person didn't trust that you could come into their home,
sure.
right? So you had to find other ways, at least that was my experience, to do that. Of course, at a certain point, yes. you go into the home, because then they trust you.
Right.
You have established a relationship, and then it's okay, because, of course, sampling over the screen is everyone's nightmare.
Because the clients that we got through COVID were all old clients we'd serviced before who were buying projects. And so we really sort of were able to narrow that down to people who we knew, who knew us, and that kind of gave us sort of that.
You already had your rapport.
Yeah, for sure.
I think part of it also, too, was a huge amount of repeat business. And just what you're saying, I did the same thing, too. In places where I never had thought I'd ever go down to Orange County, Newport Beach, to do houses, do up a loft up in Hollywood. But again, these were all repeat, and they felt comfortable working with somebody that they had worked with before. I think that really did a good telling during the post-pandemic time. It has to be a comfortableness with somebody. Because if you're not comfortable with working with a particular designer or whomever, contractor, you kind of stand back. But if you have with the same person, and repeat that, is that, yes, you're very comfortable with them, and you will do whatever's necessary in that post-pandemic period.
So I found that people were, since the pandemic, they're more into comfort. They just want to be comfortable. They were stuck in the house for, almost 2 years. So they realized that, this could be changed. This is too formal. Let's, switch this around a little bit. And because my husband and I, we do interior and landscape, a lot of the clients want to push out walls and open up the space to bring the outside in and the inside out. And so we've been doing a lot of outdoor living spaces. Mm. And actually, it's been really fun.
Well, I have a funny note about that. I moved here during the pandemic from New York. And to speak of comfort, I was working primarily remotely with clients, that repeat clients that were in New York. I couldn't get any business in California because nobody knew me. So I'm finally busy here now, but for the first 2 years. And then as soon as everybody started flying again, I was flying back because I had two projects there and I was going almost like once a month. But in New York, most people have smaller spaces and they were trying to build things up because suddenly, the husband and wife were both working from home with screaming kids. So it was a little, yes, the outside in, great, maybe more plants, but people mostly were trying to, divide. It's just, divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did your showroom partners and manufacturers since then, how has that relationship changed?
For me, it hasn't changed at all. No. I mean, I have a team that I have been working with now since basically the beginning, and even before. And we have a partnership, same, whether it's a painter, whether it's a whomever. We worked very well together and try to not change. We try to continue to work as a team. We're always a team. We're never not a team. I don't think it's changed at all. My business is still the same.
I think that they're more intuitive to our needs. They're always asking, can I send you this? Can I send you that? Whereas before, it was kind of a hit and miss. I think they're just a little bit more conscious of, mm-hmm. What we do, and they want to accommodate us more.
I think I always enjoy. I like tech. I always liked it. I'm a bit of a Star Trek-y person myself. So I welcomed the computer from the very beginning. I'm not the generation that grew up with it from the start. So I did always a lot of research online. But that being said, after you do your research, you want to talk to people because they have the knowledge. So I always had teams of people that would provide the knowledge that I could not get by the research I was doing, because it was specific in any given area. As a designer, you have to solve so many problems that you cannot be an expert in everything. So that's why the team, as you were saying, is essential. You have to have a great team.
Right.
And in that sense, communication with your team of experts and vendors is more than ever essential, because right. service is not something we're seeing everywhere these days, right? To say it lightly.
Right.
And during the pandemic, it was tough to visit showrooms. I mean, even mm-hmm. once the design center started opening up, you needed to make an appointment or whatever. And it became incredibly difficult to go to the design center and shop, because it was all of a sudden, it's I need to go to Holly Hunt, but they don't have a 1 o'clock ready, but they have a 2, but I'm here. And so you found workarounds around, and those have carried over to a large extent. We don't tend to shop furniture at showrooms much anymore. We tend to shop it online and visit the trade shows like High Point or Las Vegas to sort of get a sense of general things. Fabric is the tougher one, but we even rarely shop fabric now because we have people come to the office and do presentations and shop that way. And it has streamlined that shopping process a lot more. We find we're spending a lot less time out of the office shopping and more time able to do that in the office.
I think the other thing too was the relief that the pipeline finally, that was the biggest stress during the pandemic, was the pipeline was not working at all.
Yeah.
And our vendors, you know, it really put them on the spot, particularly in appliances, plumbing, fixtures, that kind of thing. And so I think they became more service oriented to a certain degree, to your point, Juliet, because they really knew that they needed us. But I think the thing that they did was they made more available to us online. So it became easier for designers, as they used to say, if you're buying at 12 o'clock at night, you can come on. And but everybody now to stay competitive has to have a working website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every
sure.
major brand.
Sure. Right. And you can order them your samples.
You can order,
that way, which
yes.
is nice.
Yeah. And then there was a company called Material Bank. I don't know if I'm allowed to say
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
they really changed everything where, you know, you could be getting a pedicure and shopping on your phone and the samples would be at your house the next morning by FedEx.
Yeah.
I still
yes.
don't know how they do it.
Hmm.
But
yeah,
it's incredible.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah.
yeah.
So this connection between the virtual world and the real world has become really an essential tool.
Mm-hmm. It feels like though there's a tsunami coming in terms of the showroom model. Like I don't know how that showroom model works economically for a lot of these people, because you go to the design center and there's eight designers wandering around. There's like nobody ever there.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't seem as though the showroom is driving income, but the overhead is so astronomically high, and it feels at some point that has got to flip in some way, and a rethink of what a showroom is or is about or how it operates. It feels like that's sort of the next shoe to drop.
Yeah, that is so true. If you walk around, I won't say names, but you walk around and you go, wow, you know.
Nobody's here.
There's no one
in
here.
But you still
yeah.
need to try things.
Yeah.
It's interesting because in New York, like the D&D Center is still relatively, it's busier than it is, like, you know, I could tell the difference like between the D&D and the PDC, but even at the D&D, the rents are so high and there are lots of showrooms that are now open. Obviously, you still want to be able to try things in person and, you know, with textiles, like you have to go in touch.
Sure.
But I feel like in California, at least, people are sending samples out or they're doing, you know,
absolutely.
Visits,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, firm
yeah.
visits
right.
more
yeah.
than they were
yes.
in New York
yes.
or so.
Yeah.
And it's convenient. There's just,
yeah.
It's not, yeah.
In San Francisco, what the design center does a lot is just have events and have educational events. So they'll invite, you know, whatever window treatment specialist
mm-hmm.
or a designer, an artist,
sure.
a furniture maker, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you have the opportunity to just learn a bit more,
yeah.
like
yeah.
like it would be an office
sure.
presentation. And you meet other people. So it has this, you know, this typically San Francisco kind of thing, but it's really,
sure.
it works.
Yeah,
you know?
And there was recently a vendor day at H.D. Buttercup, and I think there was like 25 different vendors.
Were you there?
I did.
I went, and it was fun.
Great.
It was great. I went.
And that's a
yeah.
great alternate to a design center, to
yeah.
be able to sort
yeah.
of say,
right.
do this a couple
yeah.
times a year, we'll come and see what we need to see,
yeah.
and then we can go away.
Also, H.D. Buttercup was a little bit more centralized, so that people were easier to get
like
to and easier
sizes.
Parking.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Easier,
easier parking.
Yeah.
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 yeah. Not for you.
Yeah, parking. Let's talk
and
about
then,
parking.
And then,
yeah.
yeah, so that's a really good point. Before the pandemic, they used to do events there, you know, all the time. So I'm glad to see that they're bringing that back.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah,
it feels.
I
got to
get on their
yeah.
mailing list again.
Right.
Yeah,
guess,
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Out here.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah,
you know. So really, I mean, there are events and teaching events that people will go to.
Mm-hmm.
It just has to be kind of centrally located.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know, it can't be too far
easy
away.
Easy access.
It's like
yeah.
You know, I will go up to the valley.
no.
It's too far away. Not coming from the beach. And I don't expect people to, well, like, oh, here's a good example. We had, I just got a word that there's going to be an IP event for ASID Pasadena at the Altadena Country Club. Well, from Manhattan Beach to Altadena Country Club is not the easiest thing to get to.
Yeah.
But I've been to one before, about 5-6 years ago, and the Pasadena group throws a really nice IP event, expo, mm-hmm. and we are going to be doing one in the Los Angeles chapter as well in the fall.
What's an IP event?
Industry partner.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's very ASID talk.
I was thinking I'm probably the only one not knowing what it is.
I think it's just us at ASID that talk about it like that instead of it. Sorry. But, you know, it's. And going back to the other points you guys were talking about is I'm still old school. I like to go and touch and feel.
Especially with fabric.
Fabric is those. Well, that was one of my last jobs too. But before this one, I have a kinship to fabric. I love fabric. I think fabric is there's so many new and innovative constructions right now. So many beautiful patterns out there.
Colors.
I mean, you could just mention everything. And I think I'm still old school. I like to do the touchy-feely. I like to get the samples from the showrooms. I like to take the samples to the client right then.
Absolutely.
Is less about touchy-feely and more about is the showroom model the way to, is there other ways of achieving touchy-feely without spending $25,000 a month on a showroom?
Yes, that's a very good question. Yeah.
Unless you do it more localized.
Yeah.
I mean, see, we actually do have somebody, it's funny, in El Segundo, but she hasn't put her full strength behind it. Her lighting needs to be better. And I mean, there's a couple of things that she hasn't spent the money on that maybe a showroom would have spent the money on. Does she have a lot of samples? Oh my God, she has tons. So if there's an emergency, I'll go up to El Segundo and look up there.
Mm-hmm.
But usually I will go to the PDC just because of the different showrooms that I will enjoy going to.
The Pacific Design Center.
Because I live in such a remote area, I have some vendors send me their fabric books.
Yeah.
And so that really helps because I can... You know, show the client, and then if there's something they like, then I order larger samples.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. You know.
Right. So you keep a materials library in your office,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what we do too.
We have.
I mean, this goes all the way back to the very first like intern job that I had in New York, where everyone you have all the fabric boxes sorted by color, maybe by type, you have the books, you have the trims, and it's so specific and particular to this industry, obviously, but I mean, we have, I think, a fairly, for not a huge office space, we have a fairly robust materials library, but it tends to be basics, neutrals, nothing too crazy, so when you're at that jumping off point, the beginning of a project, there's nothing I love more than wandering around the PDC and just taking inspiration, seeing all the different lines, picking out the new fabrics, everything that you want for this one client, that idea for that client is just like, it's the best part.
Yeah, I think in terms of materials, we see a lot happening. That's one area of our field that is really exciting me, is the new materials.
It's fabrics,
is the fact that, you can tell your clients now that there are sustainable options. We are not totally there, but we are doing good work.
Does everybody find that their clients do care about sustainability and wellness, or do we just talk about it more? And at the end of the day, if it looks good, they're happy with it, or the price is right.
My clients, we talk about it more.
I think we talk about it more.
We talk about it more. And like some clients really care about it, and others not as much.
Yeah, the majority don't.
But like, they talk about it till they see what the trade-off is. Mm-hmm. But I would say for me personally, one of the areas that bothers me the most is the amount of waste in our industry. I try so hard to cut back on catalogs and samples that I don't need, because it just kills me the amount of trash that I throw out in my office. And demolitions. I'm about to start a new project, and working in a kitchen, it just really hurts me to know that, you know, the refrigerator, everything's going to end up on a landfill. I know there's more organizations now that have answers to these things, but I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about that.
Well, I tend to be optimistic. I understand. I mean, it's not in our field. It's not that we're become enthusiastic for sustainable solutions right now, right? Everybody has been thinking about this for a long time. But there were no options, really, or very little options. I always compare it to organic food. You know, you might have wanted to eat something organic. You know, I was vegetarian way back then, and it was very difficult in those days. Now I have so many options. So we have the same going on with our industry, where you have to take it one day at a time and just count your blessings. We do have options. There are good companies in the United States, so that you can also talk about the full cycle of the product. So are we choosing products that where transportation is going to be an issue because they come from overseas? As much as I love European products, after all, that's my background, but can I find an equivalent here? What are we doing to educate our clients to express the fact that there are certain options that they have right now? Others, they don't, but we do have options. And I'm one that I try at least to explain that. And no judgment if someone doesn't want to go that route, but I think that it's my responsibility to point out that we have a partnership with nature now, that wellness, as you said, is synonymous to what I do. So I'm offering the second layer, the second skin. We are not talking about our body, but our home is our skin, and people have to be aware of the choices they make. Sometimes they also choose because they don't know that everything is exuding on them, and it might not be the most healthy option that they're choosing for, right?
I think it's one of the things, though, that the designer has to educate also the contractor.
Yes.
Because I find that...
That's a good point.
...that in my business... The contractor's willing and ready to throw it away ASAP.
Yes.
They don't care.
Right.
Whereas the client will stand back and she'll just kind of go, or he or she will go, okay, whatever. They don't really know. They're just kind of going with the flow. Whereas I will always, and I try to only use one, I use Habitat for Humanity as my go-to.
They don't take everything.
Well, they I don't know.
About.
The
very selective.
Just about.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It could be location in LA. Mm-hmm. In the South Bay area, they've been very liberal about taking.
My experience is if it's over 3 years old for appliances or anything
No, see, I've been very lucky.
Yeah.
And I think it is also the designer who has to educate the contractor.
Yes.
The first word is it's not to throw it away. You have to offer it to somebody.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why I use Habitat for Humanity.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
It's a
very good one.
Yeah, it's a very good one.
Yeah. I use Habitat for Humanity as well. And they just about take everything.
Yeah. I know.
And the other thing that you can do too is actually give it to a charitable organization.
True.
Because, you know, there's always families out there that are looking for something, and a refrigerator that's slightly used, or, you know, because sometimes when you do these remodels, they've had that refrigerator for maybe a year, you know, and they just want to do something different. So
Don't you find it hard, though, to find that person to give it to? In other words,
no.
If it's not an organization, but to find just a person by themselves? Oh, you find it easy?
It's really pretty easy. I'm very connected in the community.
Oh, cool.
I do a lot of community work, so I know which organizations.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, see families and know, you know, the needs and stuff like that. So
I find, though, that there's always a lot of workmen, especially in the demo period.
Yes.
And they all have families and communities.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A lot of times
they'll take
anything, which
Absolutely.
Makes it a lot easier, too.
Yeah.
Well,
I think
it's also the designer, though, can also say to them, hey, guys, take it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Take it.
Yeah.
I do that quite often, too.
You do that all the time.
And
they take
it.
Everything.
Right.
Take it, guys.
And
take it. Don't throw it away. Take it.
Home.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
And they all have trucks and they just drive it away.
Exactly.
I think it's important.
Yeah.
And I find that a lot of my clients are really concerned about energy efficiency, sustainability. They consciously don't really know, or they might think they might know about that, but you know, they really don't know, you know, as much as we might. But energy efficiency, they're really concerned about keeping, you know, their utilities bills down and stuff like that. Even with window coverings, they're like, we want something that's going to block out the mm-hmm. sun. You know,
I was just going to ask, because that makes such a difference.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. Yeah. So I find that that's one of the things that, you know, they ask for. Mm-hmm. I just saw a lady yesterday that was so concerned about the sun coming in and her office, and it was so hot. And so I was able to give her a solution for window coverings, you know, for that. So.
Right. And I feel like a lot of our clients now are looking at materials that are going to hold up to, mm-hmm. say, sunfast, stain resistance. And it also feels like finally the textiles and the fibers have caught up, in which they have a luxury feel, but they resist stains.
Mm-hmm.
They
it's
will...
It's the outdoor fabrics.
I mean, there were...
That are amazing.
There would be,
mm-hmm.
you know, times just a couple of years ago, that we suggested to some of our clients that they use an quote-unquote outdoor rug indoors, it would have been a non-starter.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely
mm-hmm.
not. Now,
mm-hmm.
outdoor rugs are hand-knotted. They're custom-colored.
Mm-hmm.
They have the feel of a mohair or a silk.
Mm-hmm.
And now these clients are using them in their dining rooms or in their living rooms, and they are... But like, you know, bulletproof. Like, you can't stain them. You can't.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
You know, and they'll last forever.
Mm-hmm. I feel like also since the pandemic, two things. One is everyone's got a pet now. I think I read 96% of households now have pets of some kind.
Yes.
So no matter what you have, be it flooring, rugs, furniture, it has to be pet-proof, number one.
Yeah,
right.
And kid-proof, absolutely.
Kid-proof, kid-proof is a little easier than pet-proof, I think.
Yes.
But, and then number two, it's cleanliness. It has to be easy to clean.
Yes.
I don't know if that's I don't even think that's generational, but I have found people more OCD now than they used to be about cleanliness and making sure it can be done easily.
Yes.
One thing I should mention, like, was one particular project where the client has done a lot of research into PFAS because it's related to his work, and a lot of this performance fabrics are now PFAS free years. So even though, and we're recommending them for kids' rooms and all of that, or we were at least, like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when it was performance everything. Like, but when you look into the science of it, I mean, you really have to be careful. And like, and many companies, because it's not by law, still they're not required to say whether their textiles have been treated with PFAS or not. It's just they're not doing it, and it is up to you to, like, to contact the manufacturer or the vendor and have the vendor call the manufacturer. And, like, they ended up reupholstering something in this project because it had PFAS, even though it wasn't listed. It was very interesting. And this came from the client. Usually we're the ones driving it, but like some people are very, very particular.
Yeah.
But because I love the performance is great, and but I think there's a,
exactly,
there is a big range there. There is, so like, yeah.
Exactly the discussion, what is important to you, because we have fabrics that are green guard, they're good for children, allergies, all of that. Good quality, you know. You have also fabrics that are man-made, you know, vegan, all sorts of vegan fabrics that are, let's say, better for your health.
Yeah.
So these options are there today. It's a matter of, is the client interested in it? And what is the price increase, if there is a price increase? And you have to make a case for that, you know. Mm-hmm. If you have a child that has an allergy, I think that price will be worth it, right? Because it's your child's health. But if that's not a concern and you want to, for instance, talk about your floors because that's something that you walk on every day, so, you know, you can layer it like a design. You can layer your options for the client. So where is it essential that we go sustainable? You don't want to have glues. You don't want to have certain solvents and things. And okay, so let's talk about that. So next layer. So until you get to all the soft stuff, the upholstery, are you going to reupholster? Do you want window treatments? You know, so, you know, this is a conversation that I think that is fun to have. It's good, you know. And there's, once again, no judgment. People have the liberty to choose whatever they want. They're our clients. We are here just to offer the best service we can, you know, and education is part of it.
Since you guys work in different states or locations, do you find differences?
We do. At the moment, we have projects in Utah, Wisconsin, Missouri, and Florida. So, but we've also done a bunch of work in, you know, like Indonesia, Singapore, Egypt. So, yeah.
So, do you see a difference, or
how are the clients different?
Well, the international clients, the international clients can be a little challenging. There's a, especially as sort of we head towards the Middle East. There's a lot of cultural differences that are, that's its own set of issues.
But some of the some of the homes that we're doing outside of California are people that have their primary residence in California. So the clients might, you know, it sort of has the same interaction. I'd say it's more in the contractors and the trades.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Getting material.
And getting
the
same. There's like in some of the sort of resort towns that we work in, contractors, there's very few very high-end contractors, and so they kind of do the job the way they want to do it, not the way you want them to do it. And that can be a little tough, and it's really about sort of trying to establish a really good relationship with them. So we spend a lot of time trying to get to know them, become more friendly with them than maybe we would here, just because we really want to be able to sort of leverage that personal element to sort of to the advantage of our client. Also, too, it's like, you know, getting used to the climate is a different, I mean, I grew up in Australia, so the idea of doing a ski house to me is like, what the?
Yeah.
And so the idea of water and snow and that whole thing is a little bit of a mystery. So there's that.
For me too.
For me
California.
I grew up in Brazil, right?
So, but that's part of the challenge. That's really sort of part of the fun element of it.
You know, LA is so big that even with LA, you have the chances.
Yeah, you could be doing a ski
Calabasas. I mean, it cracks me up because my Calabasas client has a home in Palm Springs.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, why do you need to duplicate your... It's the same weather, same... Oh, no, no, it's very, very different.
Right.
We need to get away. So, you know, it's crazy. But then you go down to South Beach and you've got the moisture and the sand, and that's totally different.
It's interesting, though. One of the things, because, you know, our design philosophy is this idea of interior design is a form of portraiture. It's about creating a home that looks like them. Recently, we've taken on a couple of sort of mid-century historical homes. One in Palm Springs that's, you know, a well-known like house that people know, and then another Gregory Ains house. And then you're starting to straddle this idea of, well, it, these people have bought this house because of who designed it 75 years ago, but at the same point, we've tried to want to make it look like them, and it's just sort of straddling that sort of, it's almost a conflict of interest. And so it's those sorts of things that probably represent more of a challenge than geography for us. It's like, how do we take this idea of making a house look like you when the house is such an identity in and of itself that's not who you are? So that's always sort of a fun experience.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Did you want to say something? Sorry, I didn't want to.
Well, I just wanted to comment. You were saying, you know, you do projects in different areas of the world. I'm finding in our area that a lot of people are moving into our area.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
This is their second home, third home, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and so they're coming in from the Bay Area and Los Angeles, San Diego, just Fresno, Bakersfield, from everywhere. So really get kind of a mix of what they want, different designs.
How do you find that? I mean, as much as what you know, we're working in those places, how do you find when people bring those places to you?
It can be challenging, but I find that the people that are coming from the beach areas into our area, because it's another beach area, they're easier to work with, you know, and because they're casual, you know, whereas some people, like from Bakersfield or Fresno area, they're used to more of a traditional, you know, feel. So you got to work with them a little bit more to get that more casual, you know, feel to it. So.
Yeah, I can attest to that. I'm one of the newbies here. I'm here since November. I know Los Angeles, but never as my place of residence. And I worked in the Bay Area. I still have a client there. And yes, to my surprise, because when I moved there, I had this idea, well, this is going to be a place where you'll have all these people from all over the world. But that's actually more Los Angeles than there. Yes, but they were very specific in certain areas like tech and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that they didn't want a broad palette of possibilities. It's just that they felt very strongly for certain, they had certain inclinations, like, you know, the more subtle approach, the more ton sur ton, nothing too exuberant, not a whole lot of color, a little more formal. That's certainly, the profile.
Yeah, most people don't want color. Which I love colors. So.
Yeah,
that's kind of hard to to work with. You know, why don't you do this in red? You know, and they're like, oh no.
Oh,
how do you find working with different generations? Are you seeing differences in values and taste, like Generation Z coming up versus the millennial baby boomers, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I find that the younger generation are really more interested in quality. They want something that's going to last.
Oh, see, I'd say the exact opposite.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yes.
They're very disposable. And it really has to do with their priorities. So they, you know, taking a lot of money to buy a new house or buy furniture or whatever. They've got kids. So they're not interested in inheritance or, you know.
I think the kids need to be educated. By the time I think you get to your, late 20s or so, they're absolutely interested in quality. Like, at least the clients I have come across, late 20s, early 30s. It's just but I, for instance, I'm helping, with a 12-year-old's bedroom right now. And, I was told, so what are you into? Oh, just Google aesthetic. What kind of aesthetic? No, aesthetic. You're going to see all these things on Amazon. And, they're, $100 chairs that were, horrible quality. But it's all about this look, and it's up to you to educate, maybe the parents don't care as much either because it's the kids' room, or so it really varies by client, but I think they want what they see, online. It's not I'm going to try to make up my own style or so
it's the influencers
and,
big,
and it is not so much about how well made it is.
I seem to get a lot of younger people who are single. And they're working remotely. Their main office might be in San Francisco or LA or San Diego or whatever. And so they know that they want to retire in that, we're in San Luis Obispo area. And so they know that they want to make that house their main residence eventually. And so they want to put in, the quality, they want everything automated, because, you know, they're into tech and stuff. So that's kind of what I'm finding.
It's interesting because someone touched earlier on the idea of inheriting and stuff. It's something we, because our client base is really 50 up. We don't really have much of that younger range.
So many
of those people are like looking at their China or their, and they're like, well, I was so excited when I got my mother stuff. There's not a prayer my daughter is the hell do we do with this?
Yes.
And that's an interesting sort of problem. It's like for the first time you've got the next generation who isn't aspiring to get mom and dad's furniture or mom and dad's china or whatever, and it's this whole glut of stuff.
One of the trends I have found is more towards minimalism now, and it's really about cutting back on things. But I have clients, like, they don't have books anymore, but they want to have a bookshelf, and but they have no books, they have no tchotchkes, they, you know. What do you want to put on these bookshelves?
Right. It's a bookshelf for a reason.
Yeah. And I said, I'm not going to put up a bookshelf if you have nothing to put on the bookshelf. We'll get a piece of art. But I have found myself going to the Beverly Hills Library in the resale department and buying books just to have something to put on. But
for sure.
But that's not even age related. Everyone's reading off their Kindle now. And
right.
You know.
Right.
But I don't know, are there any styles that you see that are more popular?
You know, I mean, I think that there is a slight pullback on the all neutral palettes that I, you know, I love a good neutral, like, don't get me wrong, always will. But I definitely have seen people coming and saying, you know what, we really want like a deep blue sofa, or willing to look at cabinetry, and it's not white, it's not gray, it's not taupe, you know, it might be like a color, and they're okay with that, and it's going to be there for, you know, a decade plus, and I think that's thrilling, you know. And I see, you know, there'll be a ground, so you ground the room in a colorful rug. So, you know, you're making a custom rug and you're incorporating all these different colors into it, and then maybe you're laying neutrals on top of that. But that rug, they're going to have with them forever, and they're okay with that because you can take it in a million, you know, many different ways, like down the road. And that's what I'm sort of seeing.
I always tell my clients, let's start with the basics, you know, the rug. What are some of your favorite colors? You know, so I try to get samples of like different rugs from different manufacturers and kind of start with that and start building the palette, you know, from there, because that is the base. And then the window coverings is like the frosting, you know, on the cake. So try to pull everything together from that. But it's just hard to get people away from neutrals, you know.
But I also find that, you know, it, and I even have this on my website, is that there needs to be that splash of color.
Yeah.
I really emphasize that with my clients. Mm-hmm. And they say, okay, where? And I, of course, one of my first things is I always say artwork. Artwork's important. But the second thing I always use is decorative pillows.
Yeah.
I think of decorative pillows on neutral furniture or black furniture or whatever, can really spice up a room, and you can actually change the pillows seasonally.
Right.
So like I will have one changing from the spring to the summer brights to then maybe holiday. So maybe three times a year I will suggest having decorative pillows to change. And I think that most people see that as a good option. And it's whether they're custom pillows or even pillows from Pottery Barn sometimes. I think decorative pillows are one of the key ways to get that use of color into a room.
It gives a pop of color and makes it it changes the whole
look. Yeah, mm-hmm. and it actually makes it even more livable.
Mm-hmm. That and rugs.
And rugs, yeah.
I just love. We're talking about layering a space, right? So right. And so the pillows and the soft stuff and how you go from the whole idea about the interior and you kind of work with color. I mean, I'm with you. I love color. And my two neighbors here, I'm sure you also love color. So it's really great to be.
I'm full of colors in the artwork or the pillows. Oh, okay. I'm mostly more of a neutral person. Okay. German father versus the person. So, yeah,
so that was it on color. I got the rest of the conversation there.
Yeah. I'm also, go ahead.
No, I was going to say Australia also has a lot of colors. So.
We do have a lot of color, yeah.
Do you work with a lot of color in your
interiors? We don't tend to be. We sort of built a career on neutrals. I don't know. Our houses tend to be more stories about texture and silhouette than...
More contemporary?
A little bit all over the place.
Okay.
You know, we've got... it's kind of fun to do some... We just finished a very, very traditional sort of French house in Orange County. Oh, and that was sort of fun because then we were sort of working with all these, like, you know, and the wife had an obsession with purple. So we found every silk purple damask there was to be found. and that was a sort of a fun experience. So you sort of get that little bit out of the system.
Right.
A lot of the houses we're working on now, we're working on a couple of big mid-century ones. Those tend to be a lot more neutral and a lot more sort of like Scandinavian antiques and things like that. So,
a lot more use of woods.
Absolutely.
Definitely woods. Yeah. And I think that's, natural products such as wood, I think is key to any environment right now. It can be natural. You can actually sometimes paint them, paint the wood. But I think wood is a good part of every design.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you have your color right there, right? I mean, we tend to think in terms of reds and oranges, but... Right. Your materials have colors. Yeah, so,
exactly. Yeah. Even though there were some amazing steel cabinets here.
Yeah, there was great. Those are beautiful.
So,
I love those.
Yeah.
So.
Do you find your clients now wanting more tech systems from you, like mood boards and 3D renderings, that kind of thing? Are you getting more requests?
We went through a phase of everybody wanted 3D renderings, which we hate. It's like there's too many decisions that are made before the decisions are ready to be made.
Yeah. Right. Yes,
and so so you get to the end of the project, they're like, well, where's this yellow lamp? It's like, well, we decided not to do yellow. We have not doing this. And so it's like... We try to pull back from that as much as possible and sort of explain, look, it's just not how it is.
Yeah.
I sketch pretty good. And so I tend to do a lot of like 3D line sketches that we do, and we do those usually in meetings where it's so you can start talking about, well, there's a rug here and then there'll be a sofa here, and you can really control how you tell the story about the space, and at the end they have married your sort of verbal description with the sketch, and that really is a way of sort of painting. I mean, I think you just have to find the way that works for you. For us, the tech stuff it's a little cold.
Do people ask for the 3D from you?
Yeah,
I get requests for it.
We get some requests. We haven't had a request in a while.
I have to say it really saved me, though, because I have one client who's a producer. She was away for 6 months shooting a movie, but I had done the 3D rendering before. And so the whole time then when we were working on the room, she was totally relaxed because... She knew what was coming. So, and it came out actually very, very close to what the rendering was initially. Yeah. So we had to choose everything up front,
Our process is not really like that. Ours is a more sort of organic. It's tough to...
You do the mood boards, right? That's what you do.
We've developed a Canva language that works for us. And it conveys
the
story.
That's excellent to hear that. Because when I started working here in the United States... I was going, why would I do AutoCAD? It takes me hours, or I have to pay someone to do AutoCAD. If it's not a kitchen remodel or something that needs technical things, if we're talking about a furniture plan, so I found this software. So to go short, I have an online platform where I can do mood boards.
What's it called?
It's called Design Files. It's a Canadian company. Oh, wow. They're very good on updating their software. And they do, I don't have any shares, but I just love the software because it's back of the office and front of the office for the client. I can send them the images of the mood boards or a simulation of a 3D where I use the real furniture. So I can go to any place that has an image. It doesn't have to be a cut image. And I can import it in my drawing and make something that looks like a 3D. So that's really quick and that's fun to do. And when it's necessary, I present that. They can react, they can approve, not approve. So you have your legal side covered right there because they send a message back what they approved it. So it really helps to make the process really fun for the client. And I have less work. If I do a renovation, of course, I'll have designers doing the cut. But if I can avoid cut, I'm a happy person.
I have a client right now who swears by a program called Snagit. Mm. And he has his own direct mail business, so this is how he communicates with his clients. But basically, you can take an image, anything you're looking at, any website, anywhere, grab this image, and then you label on it what it is that you are pointing out in that image. Mm. I like this light or this color or whatever. And then you put together a library. You can do it by room. And then they can then put comments on it and send it back to you. So if you can't get hold of them for 2 days or whatever, you're not losing any time because they're sending you back comments and you're sending them comments. And
exactly.
It's actually pretty efficient.
It's very efficient, too.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I mean, my worry is always they're going to be too literal about, like, I tend to think more conceptual, so I'm kind of a layer above where they are. He's saying, I like this tile, but, you know, you just have to interpret and at least know what's going on in their head because they can't verbalize it all the time.
Yeah. It's a lot what he was saying, how you present it.
Yeah.
I pointed, that's not very nice, but I was saying, I agree that is important, that you have to make clear what you're presenting and what kind of feedback you're expecting from the person.
I was just going to say, everyone's so busy now. And so I think the more tools you can give people that fit with their lifestyle and their schedule, and yet you're not losing any time communicating, you know, the better it is for everyone.
Yeah. So with our business, because we do the interior and exterior with the landscaping, we always start sketching right there in front of the client, you know, different options and stuff. But then we all go back and have to do a formal, you know, drawing. And we do have someone that we contract with that does our SketchUp and CAD and all that. Because that, if you don't use it every day, you lose it.
Yes.
So,
I
just let the techie people, do it. It's just worth it. Saves us a lot of time. But a lot of people do, for landscape, they like to see that 3D. They want to see what it's going
to... You do have to do that for landscape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for landscape, yes. And for renovations, too. You need that.
And for kitchen and bath.
Oh,
But I find there's so many programs now that are introducing, like Studio. I don't know if anybody uses Studio for their county.
Studio.
But they now have a pay system, and they now have mood boards and all of that.
Yeah.
Style Row, Erin V, she's now has her whole system, which I think is really terrific, actually.
Yeah.
But there's more and more of them.
Even House.
If you don't get 10 emails a day from House, with their program, something's wrong.
Yeah. And what about going totally into virtual? Because I've been receiving emails about that, you know, really going AI with your design part, you know.
I wouldn't.
Anyone adventuring in that direction?
At this point, I wouldn't really know either.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a people person, so I like to be in front of the client and. You know,
kind of back and forth.
Yeah.
Yes, I know, me too. Yes, exactly.
We use AI for our social media.
Do you really?
So, yes.
Yeah. So, because I'll write and then plug it into AI and say, make an Instagram post out of this. And so it'll, you know, jumble it around.
Do
and
you
just
use
make
chat,
it a little bit.
GPT?
I switch back and forth. I just switched back to Gemini, and I think it's a little bit more, the tone of it is more in the way we would speak, I feel like. But yeah, we've used ChatGPT, we used a couple of other...
I've done that even for blogging, I hate to say, but, you know, if I... Or even I was redoing my website and I was looking for most search terms to try and incorporate for SEO. I went down the rabbit hole of SEO, which is tough. But the more I got into it, the more I really wanted to know about it. And so you have to find your key search words, and you can actually go to ChatGPT, tell them about your business, what you do, ask them what are the 10 questions that you want to know about me, and you know you have to keep drilling it down. Yeah. But
it's a fun tool.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
technology has come a long way.
Yeah. I mean, my husband is a writer, and he will like throw it out and say, "Hey, what are four concepts?" You know that. Right. Just to see if something comes up that he hadn't thought about.
I kind of like Bart. I was developing a relationship with Bart there. That's going to and fro with, okay, this is what I want you to write. And then, you know, it's kind of fun.
Yeah,
in a way. I mean, if you use it as a tool, I'm not afraid of it as a tool. Yeah. And I was referring to really making drawings with full AI. That's something I saw in Hollywood at the West Edge. What was the name of that?
West Edge.
There was a company there that was offering AI for the design part, really to produce designs. And I thought, well, it's coming. It's
Doctoring Up Design is the official podcast of Design Hardware, and it was created to address the pain points affecting the design and architecture community, diagnosing these issues and providing practical insights to address them. That's our mission. Now, the audio was recorded live, and if you would like to know more about each of the participants, check the show notes for links. And check at Design Hardware and Flooring on Instagram, where you can learn a little bit more about each of our participants, and you can learn a little bit more about ASID Los Angeles. If you're a designer in the market, I think it goes from Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, all the way to the border of LA and Orange County. It's vast. And if you work in that area and you're interested in joining ASID, again, check the show notes for links. Doctoring Up Design is available everywhere you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks for listening. See you next time.